Just for those in the room, I can tell you this meeting is not about the opioid settlement. So if you have vested interest in that conversation, that's not going to be a part of our conversation today. It was mislabeled initially in the announcement. But we're going to be looking at other opportunities for ongoing funding for the CQLI projects. Wait a moment for the council president, and we'll get started. Dawn, I was going to use this as an opportunity to update people on all the work that we've been doing. Did you want to speak to changing the census at all?
Yeah, that would be great if
we could just... Yeah, a quick over, because I've got a copy of it here, and I'll just, as we go through each of the initiatives, I'll talk about what's been happening and what's in the works, because a lot of this work has continued since December. Agenda. I'm going to use the opportunity to talk about what's been going on ever since December, so that you know and everyone knows. All right, I'm going to go ahead and call this notice meeting to order. I appreciate Council President Freeman for his willingness to have this conversation. I know he cares very deeply about the work of the CQLI committee. I want to recognize Council Member-elect Jimmy Peloso is in the room. Thank you for joining us today. We appreciate that very much. I don't know if you want to have opening comments, but I thought I would use just a quick review of the agenda. I'm going to use this opportunity today. As you know, operating in the sunshine is very difficult to have ongoing communications with our various colleagues about the work that's being done ever since the publishing and distribution of the report back in December. But there's been a lot of good work happening on multiple levels for each of these initiatives. And then to have a conversation with respect to ongoing support of the CQLI. With that, sir, it's all yours.
Well, good afternoon, Terrence Freeman, City Council at large, and to my colleague, Councilman Boylan. One, thank you for your leadership on this and leading this charge. I've done my best to try to do what effective leaders have modeled to me in the past, which is to put people in the right place on the bus and then get out of the way. But it wasn't, what I hope was that the takeaway wasn't that I was not engaged, because many times I would come sit in the room or I would try to watch the film. And so you guys are the archives of it, and let the record reflect that Council Vice President Salem has joined us. And so now it brings us to a point, the work of getting everyone in the room has been done, which was one challenge that I have observed as an outsider to this process, and then coming on the inside of this process, where our city has a lot of we have a lot of groups out doing a good work in their spaces, and in each group seem to have a particular knowledge or expertise in an area, but not a lot of crosstalk between the groups. Not allowing us to be in a position where we can leverage the work collectively to better position ourselves for addressing this issue. So that was one of my biggest goals when it came to the area of homelessness. So I thank you for that work, and I've read through the report. And so the last piece of the puzzle is, I always think that, and I've said it and I'll say it again, you know, Jacksonville should be the smartest city in the world with all of the studies that we do. And I'm a big proponent of getting information and data, and look forward to the future results from information that we get. But we must, after so many people have put so much effort into this, it's incumbent upon us to try to find a way to get a funding source, to set a floor, and preferably a reoccurring funding source. And so what does that look like? I'm really going to kind of allow the discussion to play out and kind of hear maybe some of the thoughts and the efforts that you may have, or Council Vice President Salem may have, and then I do have a few that I would, or one that I would like to bring to the table, and see if that might be a viable way of giving us some seed money for this trust fund.
Well, in terms of your engagement, this wouldn't happen without your leadership. So thank you for the opportunity to work with my colleague, Council Vice President Salem, and other members of the council, the collegial way in which we approach this, the interaction with subject matter experts throughout the community and their involvement. This was not meant to be a report that sits on the shelf. And Vice President Salem, I don't know if you want to offer any thoughts. I just took a few minutes. I'm going to use this time, because of the sunshine, the challenges, to update you and the council president on some of the good work that's happened since December. But go ahead.
Thank you, Council Member Boylan. I'm really here to listen. So I'll jump in at some later point, but right now I really want to get a feel for where you're going, and because I'm that's the purpose of the meeting, I hope.
It is, and I think, as I mentioned at the outset, I want to really start talk about what has happened since our presentation of the report in December on the various initiatives. Let me start with access to health care. As it happens this morning, I just sat through a 2.5-hour meeting with the clinics and WeCare and the funders for the Jack's Care Connect program. And I think the takeaway from that meeting was the commitment the council has made in reviewing. Let me start with that. As you might recall, just a quick step back before getting into that conversation, this council approved appropriation of $3.6 million to the various CQLI initiatives as part of its council strategic planning process. That is a significant commitment given the relatively small amount of dollars available to the work of the strategic planning process. And all of that was approved and is embedded, hopefully, and expected to be embedded in the mayor's budget once we see it this fall, and assured as the committee of the council that approves the budget, we will make certain that these dollars are there. So the commitment to these dollars is significant. As you might recall, it was $50,000 for a housing study, affordable housing study, $1 million for rental assistance, $1 million for JALA and the work that they do, $100,000 for consulting on homeless services and determining the appropriateness of and the validity of an ongoing funding stream, as we just talked about, $500,000 to Jack's Care Connect for the administration of that program, as well as the hiring of patient advocates, as more patient advocates, so they can provide that service, and then $1 million to the health safety net providers, divided $200,000 between the five clinics that are in operation. So that's what we approved in February, March of this past year to move forward in the budget. Sure.
Do we know if the administration has put those dollars into the budget that they're prepared to hand over to Mayor-elect Deegan?
I don't know the answer to that question, but I fully expect that it would be in there. And at the very least, if it's not in there, that we as a council will have the opportunity to put it back in there. Because, and maybe, Kim, do you want to speak to the viability or the commitment of those dollars, if you wouldn't mind? I'm talking about the strategic planning funds that were set aside that we as a council appropriated to be added into the MBRC for the coming, or the budget for the coming year.
Can I say one thing before she comes forward? I think it's incumbent upon you or me or President Freeman to ask that question, because I understand it's kind of a bare bones budget.
Got it.
Just to provide as much flexibility to the mayor-elect as we can, but there may be things they did put in because of that commitment. I don't know.
Well, it's higher than my pay grade, so I'll leave it to the two of you to ascertain that. But Ms. Taylor?
Kim Taylor, Council Auditor. The first part on the strategic plan, we won't know until July, really, when we get the mayor's budget. Of course, you can have conversations with them of whether they have included it all. The past years, they have included most of the requests, I would say. But on the JIA CRA that you had mentioned, I'll just briefly mention, those dollars will, in essence, once that sunsets on September 30th, those will roll into general fund dollars.
We'll hold off on that conversation until we come up later. I just want to get a sense and response to the councilman's question.
Okay, yes, sir.
So historically, these funds have been included in the budget, and we can only hope that happens, and I'll look to the two of you to help get an answer to that question, if you don't mind. All right, so with that, I did want to go back and speak a little bit to each of the initiatives and what's been taking place since the presentation in December. I've shared, obviously, the report with a number of different entities, including the Florida Health Department, and got a response from that group, from Mr. Nichols and the folks over there. We've shared that with the entities that have been involved in this process. There's some unique perspectives in that one. I won't share it per se here now, but and as I mentioned earlier, that I did have attended a meeting this morning of the five clinics in WeCare and their funders. The current pilot program is slated to sunset at the end of this year, calendar year, and we've tasked them with putting together a five-year plan, a sustainable plan to keep Jack's Care Connect moving forward and providing services that we anticipate, and to have a meaningful impact on affirming and an affirmation to the area hospitals that the work that they are doing is impacting the success of the emergency rooms and the various hospitals that and the work that they do in service of them. So those two are, I think I'm feeling pretty good about that. The other conversation, obviously, this morning was accessibility. And transportation, those are issues, and I think we're going to see a heightened awareness in trying to get those done. But I've tasked them to bring to us a business plan, five-year strategic business plan, as to how Jack's Care Connect can and will sustain and having meaningful impact on our community.
Do you want to add one thing?
Please.
And thank you, Mr. Borland, Councilman Borland. Also, with that access to health care, one of the things that this council has done that I, as I'm going around to various groups and sharing with, is the work that we did as a group in supporting the rebuilding or the building of a new trauma center, and the dollars that we set aside for that, which were significant. So I want to make sure that, you know, as we talk about this report and we talk about access to health care, when you look at, you know, one of seven trauma centers in the state, and when you look at one of the largest employers of African Americans in our city, when you look at where indigent care, the majority will go to seek services, or when people are experiencing some of their most severe medical crises, it's there. And so that is something that this body has done, and it was a part of the overarching process of access to health care. So just want to make sure I put that on the record.
Thank you, Councilmember Boylan. I'm sure we've all heard some of the discussion about the initiatives of Mayor-elect Deegan, and she's talked about health care, and she's talked about appointing a chief health care officer. I assume that would be somebody that would be up on the fourth floor, but I don't know that. When I've had people ask me about it, I said, you know, this council has been very involved in healthcare for the last 4 years between mental health and the general healthcare, as well as MHOP and opioids and all sorts of things that we have been involved in. So healthcare is not a new issue to the council. And so I'm very eager to hear what she'd like to do and how would it mix in with what we've already done. And hopefully we'll find that out in the near future. Thank
you. I have
you.
A handout which I will share. We've handed out to you that the council auditor's office was kind enough to do two very important things. Number one, as you know, as part of our conversation today is about what other communities are doing to support sustainable homelessness issues, or all of it overall. But also attached to that spreadsheet is a delineation of what we as a city council have done to support these various initiatives over the course of time. So it's not lost on any of us, the good work that we've done in that respect. So that's really what I wanted to speak to that on that particular front with respect to the healthcare initiative. Secondly, I wanted to talk a little bit about the homeless situation and what work is being done there. And Dawn Gilman is here from Changing Homelessness, and she just completed a census at the end of April. And if you want to give us a quick thumbnail on that would be helpful. Recognizing as we came out of our report, our focus really was on creating ongoing permanent home situation with wraparound services.
Yes, correct. So Dawn Gilman, CEO of Changing Homelessness. We do an annual point in time count every January. We just published the report. If anyone would like to see the full details, it is on our website at changinghomelessness.org, and happy to send it to the assistants if they want to add it as part of the record. What we found surprised us. We do this census in Duval, Clay, and Nassau counties. We did not see the increase in unsheltered homelessness that we were expecting. The only county that we saw a statistically significant increase was Nassau County. Because we have a lot of questions on this, everyone that did not do the point in time count in January has an opportunity to do it again in June. We are going to do a second point in time count. Tuesday, June 27th will be Nassau County. Wednesday will be Clay County, and Thursday, the 29th will be Nassau County, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. We are gonna focus on each of the counties for one full day, trying to get a better idea of the census. What we are seeing is the fastest growing group is 55 and over for unsheltered, and also in our shelters. Anecdotally, this seems to be that they are the highest percentage of that group is on a fixed income. If there's a sudden increase in rents, that can cause their housing to become unstable or for them to lose it. So right now, it still appears from the tail end of the COVID dollars that we are mostly holding the line. But we feel like there's a lot of shifts happening within that population. We're trying to figure out what's going on.
Thank you. So I've got a report here. I can hand it to him.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember it off the top of my head, but the unsheltered number was pretty low. It was, for the three counties, it was like under 400 folks, which just seems
Of course, your population count was low, too.
Yes.
But it is proportionate in the context, as I saw, in terms of the sheltered and unsheltered homeless.
Correct. The sheltered is obviously a much easier count to conduct because we go out to all of the shelters within the three counties and they know how many people were there the night before. The unsheltered, it still feels like people who are experiencing unsheltered homelessness continue to shift around in Northeast Florida. There were a lot of people that we found in downtown Jacksonville. Folks downtown tend, at least right now, to not be making a big effort on staying hidden. When we go out into the suburbs and the more rural areas, many of those encampments are especially hidden. There's actually one at the end of my cul-de-sac that I was unaware of until JSO got called in because it got so big, because it was literally hidden under a train culvert ditch I mean, it was pretty.
Sure.
Very, very.
And I think that's not a unique situation. I know we see those in Manning as well. Go ahead, Councilman.
Dawn, if you could clarify for me, you said 400 unsheltered.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give me the number that were sheltered, just as a ballpark figure for my brain? And were there vacancies in the sheltered facilities?
Remembering off the top of my head, I believe. Oh, you
got the chart right here.
Yeah.
The,
I will defer to Michael Boyle.
In 2023, the total persons sheltered was 851.
Okay.
And in terms of the unsheltered, it went from 1,000, almost 1,100 to 396. I didn't know the report included numbers with respect to the capacities of the shelters.
We know that there's about 900-950 shelter beds throughout the three counties. So while everyone was not at capacity, they were pretty close to it for right. that night. And that will fluctuate. We have domestic violence shelters in all three counties, so that's a very specific population. So there's always a little bit of fluctuation in those shelter numbers, but we publish a companion piece that is a housing inventory count that actually has the percentage occupancy for the night of the point in time count.
I would be interested in that if you can follow up with me specifically. We all care about the First mm-hmm. Coast, but obviously our focus is on Duval.
The outlying counties each have a domestic violence shelter, and that is it. So it is very easy for us to separate that information out for you.
Okay.
And even to your point, and I do appreciate this, you know, we did set aside $100,000 for consulting analysis of the homeless services, the appropriateness of implementing a recurring funding stream, and recommendation as the best possible path for creating such vehicles. So hopefully a lot of that information will come out, and those questions are answered as part of that process. We should move forward, assuming, of course.
You want to, the report that Michael has that we'll send to you, we actually break out by county, so you can see the overwhelming number of persons experiencing homelessness in our three-county area are in Duval County.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Dawn. I appreciate Thanks. That. The other thing I wanted to point out is, as respect you know, the homeless, in addition to what's on the spreadsheet that the auditors provided us, is a couple of pending bills. We've got a SHIP bill that's coming before committee in June. Of over $12 million to serve very low and moderate income families, as well as a home grant, federal home grant, or HUD money, that is about $4 million. So, I mean, the opportunity and the attention of both the current administration and the council in serving the homeless in our community and providing them ongoing home services as well as wraparound services associated with it, I think is can't be ignored as part of this process. Lastly, I wanted to get into conversation with respect to affordable housing, a couple of different things. Again, we had allocated in this appropriation $50,000. I did approach the Florida Housing Coalition working with Don Lockhart. We do have an RFP from them that speaks to the work that they would be willing to do. We decided to kind of stand down on it, obviously because of the change of administration. But the roadmap for that work is already in place and ready to be rolled out. And I met also, in addition to that, with both the United Way and also with the Jesse Ball DuPont Fund. I think one of the frustrating things in both the areas of homelessness and affordable housing or attainable housing is the fact we've got lots of good, well-intended organizations, to your point, that are doing this good work, but we're not doing it in collaboration. What I was very excited about the Florida Housing Coalition's RFP to us was the opportunity to help facilitate to make sure that we can make sure that they complement each other in that process. Dr. David Jaffe, as you know, was the co-chair of the Affordable Housing Workforce. He provided me just a couple weeks ago a copy of the rental housing project report that his office created. And I understand, as I mentioned, the Jesse Ball DuPont Fund has also done some extensive work in this area. So I don't think it's going to be hard for us to address all of that. The other thing that is out there and I think requires some work is the Live Local Act, in which the state legislature has just passed. There's some good things in that, I suspect, and maybe some unintended consequences as well. As you probably know, if you know anything about it, recently, I'll use this as an example, we've just provided to the Avion Development Group a REV grant that was generated through the Office of Economic Development, whereby they were looking to build a significantly large apartment complex, and that they about 280 units in total. Part of the arrangement, which we as a council just recently approved, is to give them a REV grant for 15 years, providing that they would take no less than 30% of those homes, or 96 of those, not homes, but units, and make them at 100% AMI, which would be well below market rate, in return for a REV grant. In the first 4 years of that arrangement, they would freeze the cost of that rent, and then it would only increase 2% a year for the next 11 years. I think it was a creative example of how the private sector can get engaged in this process. And I want to read from you the statement that put out by the OED, and they said, the workforce units are being offered in response to the recommendations offered by the CQLI working group, including working with private sector developers through incentives and subsidy programs to create additional affordable housing options. The Live Local Act and the council's office auditor, and I provided you one sheet of that, talked about, and I sat through a webinar, and there's extensive different reports on what the impact that might have us as a local government. I think one of the things, perhaps unintended consequences, is to provide make these tax-exempt development, which would ultimately have an impact on the revenue that we as a city could be getting from those groups. And I suspect the legislature went down that path because they probably didn't have a vehicle whereby they could encourage the REV grant program that we presently offer or have offered in the context of this particular program. All this is to say that we've done a lot of good work since December in this process. And so it's not like it sat on the shelf. We've not been working on it. I don't know the specifics. I know that council member Jacoby Pittman has been working on some things as well as the work that we've done. But I wanted to share with the two of you the good work that's being done apart from this. And I met last week with Beth Payne, who's here from the Northeast Florida Regional Council, to talk a little bit about the work that Jacoby Pittman is discussing. But I wanted to make sure you were all aware of some of these things. So it's not just that we've sat back, did our report, and sat on our hands and our haunches, not doing anything with it. So it certainly means and makes sense at this point in time that we have a conversation to say, how viable is it, how important is it to us as a council and hopefully as an administration to come up with a sustainable support. And both of us know very, very well over the course of the past 2 years, and we read in the paper almost every day now, the impact of attainable or affordable housing and the challenge of it and what's happening in our community. So I think I'm hopeful that we as a body will continue to be aggressive and proactive in addressing these issues. And I think today's conversation could be part of that process. I did ask Kim Taylor, because there was some conversation about the prospect of some seed funding. I wanted to, Councilman Salem, Vice President Salem, I wanted you to speak a little bit to the Project Safe Lives Trust Fund. Because I think, in my mind's eye, I'm looking at a similar kind of scenario, whereby we create a trust fund, and there's an opportunity to perhaps some seed funding for that, either through the CRA that she mentioned a few minutes ago, and or other, but one that allows us, the community as a whole, the private sector, the nonprofit sector, to be part of the conversation and be part of the contribution to a seed fund so that we can create sustainable funding available for these particular initiatives. So with that, I'll open up the floor. That's my thought with respect to say, what are our options? And as I shared with you in that spreadsheet that the council's auditors put together, they gave us some other options of what other cities are doing. And this may be premature in terms of the context, because we haven't done that analysis yet, but I think we want to kind of set the table to say, if there is an opportunity presently to find seed funding to put in place, let's take advantage of it. Councilman Freeman, you're recognized.
Thank you, Councilmember Boylan. First, I want to say, I used to joke about my youthfulness, but trying to read this right now, I'm realizing it's time for me to get glasses, all right? So I've had the heart, my arm is just not long enough at times, or it's too short at others, so I'm going to start bringing my cheaters when I get this. So I'm sure it's a lot of good stuff on it.
Welcome to my world.
Exactly. But I just had a few points, and then I'll defer. One, I think one of the things that made me a very competitive athlete was my will to never give up and to keep pushing through and to keep showing up every day and stepping back in that batter's box and swinging and swinging and swinging and swinging. And now when I get into this government space, you know, one of the biggest lessons I had to learn, I don't have to like it, but is that government is slow. There's nothing fast about government when you start looking at processes like this. And so with that caveat and understanding, and some of these conversations, you know, take opioid, for instance, that started under Bill, Council President, past Council Member Bill Gulliford. It's 5-6 years of being in this journey. Right, and so even when we listen to what Council Vice President Salem has to say about that trust fund, that work was done several years ago, and we're seeing the results of it manifested now. And so we look at where we're at in this conversation, put out the little cliche, I am a team player. So I don't ever want to sound like I'm not a team player, because I am. And I have handled more of my concerns behind closed doors, with administration or with authorities or others, prior to ever going in front of our city and presenting anything other than a unified front. But I have to say this, and I said this when I put myself forward to be president. We are the legislative branch of government. You have an executive branch, you have a legislative branch. Our city moves best when we move forward together. Not at the beckoning of one or of the other, but together. And I think that is why in this past year, I have experienced a lot of success with this current administration, was I was clear up front and also made the promise of no surprises. And so we've been able to work through a lot of scenarios. But when I look at this issue here and I look at the change over of the next administration, I sometimes think, well, if we did not have a changeover, would we still be moving forward? And if the answer is yes, then I'm not ready to hit the brakes just because there's a new one. Because we are the legislative branch. We are allowed to lead. And if they find value in the work that this body has done, and all of us going on our second term, and none of this was stuck, this is not something that we just thought of and started. We've been putting work on it for a while. If they find value in it, then they will add it to their transition talks, and I've been a part of transition teams and sat in and watched how things were embedded and taken out. So I'm not inclined to be reactive when we put so much of our efforts and our time into it, and at the end of the day, it's still coming back to us. So I really wanted to put that out there. And so for me, I don't like subjectivity. I know Council Vice President Salem is similar in that aspect, so I can't give a magic number of what that floor looks like. So that would give me a little bit of uneasiness in trying to find it. But you mentioned, you know, some various ways. And for me, I think that, and I asked a question to the auditors, and I know Phillip's on his computer right now, probably crunching the numbers for us. But I was in a discussion when we had our last CRA meetings. And there was a CRA, one of the ones that didn't have a report out, didn't have anything, and I'd already been briefed on it, but I kind of wanted it put out so the public could consume it, and was like, so why are we not having a report on it? And they're like, well, it's because it's going away. That's fine. It's sunsetting. And so I then ask, what happens to those remaining dollars? Like, if you think back during Council President Hazuri's term, that was the fund, the source that we took the 1.7 or 2.8 million from when they did their social justice issue. I don't recall all of it. Wasn't very supportive of that process at the time. But that said, that was where they drew that money from. Meanwhile, there were still potholes and things and roads and infrastructure that needed to be repaired. And so that's another reason why I had some concern about that. Well, now that I know it's sunsetting and those dollars aren't going to necessarily be allocated towards you know, fixing Main Street. I mean, that project's in the works, so I don't want to put anybody on guard. I ask the question, what can those dollars be used for? And I'm not here to tell you I know what they can or can't be used for, but I do know where they're heading. And if they're heading to the general fund and we're looking for a source for seed money, if we're able to get seven other people, I believe it would be 10 votes on that one. It's not a CIP deal, but if we get 10 or seven other people, we could find some type of a floor to start this conversation with, and then the rest goes back into that general fund, and at least we would have something that we could go back to the consortium or whatever group is charged with. But I had questions on that, and Mr. Phillip, if you can come up, the questions I ask will be with those dollars, if that were the route, and I'm spitballing because my next two questions will really determine if I ever found peace in this. One, how would it be vetted? How would groups be vetted? And how would dollars be awarded? It almost sounds like you would need an advisory board that has some type of authority to sit over that, and that might be another process in and of itself.
I agree wholeheartedly. I did have a conversation with Mr. Peterson and Ms. Taylor the other day about all of this, but I think your point is well taken. In terms of the vehicle with respect to the administration of this process, like a KHA kind of feel to it that says these are critical issues in our community that need to be addressed, and we need to have the kind of oversight so when the appropriation happens. But you're right, that's a separate conversation. But thank you for bringing it up, because I didn't. Mr. Peterson, you want to respond to Council President Freeman's questions? Well, then I'll come back to you right after
please.
That. As a follow-up to our conversation of the other day, I think we answered a lot of those same questions from you, but go ahead.
Sure, Philip Peterson, Council Auditor's Office. So as it relates to Council President Freeman referenced the social justice funding from a couple years ago, was about $2.8 million. Currently in that GIA CRA trust fund, there's $1.4 billion unallocated. So if that money is not used by the CRA board, which obviously y'all are the CRA board by the end of the year, that $1.4 million would roll back to the general fund with no obligations or strings tied to it. As far as the CRA ending September 30th, 2023, those additional ad valorem taxes will then become general fund taxes, if you will. That's about a net $14.5 million that the general fund would see an increase in ad valorem revenues from. I know that CFO Grivey has made mention in the past that consider using those funds to cover some of the things that we've used ARP dollars for or other items. So yes, it's new revenue to the general fund and would have to be worked out between you and the new administration of how those dollars would be allocated.
I might add, in the context of that process, a lot of those ARP dollars went to rental assistance, went to healthcare access, and went to homelessness. So I think that could be an even trade-off in that process. Council Vice President Salem, you're recognized.
Thank you. I just wanted to address some of the issues that were brought up a few minutes ago. Project Save Lives is our initiative where we're approaching people that come in the emergency room, have just overdosed, brought in by JFRD. That program is funded by the general fund and has been since day one when Councilmember Gulliford kicked that off. We now have a trust fund that we are getting money through the opioid settlement. And many of you have heard me talk about this. It's roughly $85 million over the next 18 years. A small portion of that goes to Baldwin and the Beaches communities, but the vast majority comes here. The first year, it's a little over $9 million. If you've not looked at your agenda for tomorrow night, we are introducing the legislation to establish a public service grant process to allocate those dollars. We're gonna use, as it is in the legislation, 40% for new programs, and we're going to use 60% of those dollars to cover things like Project Save Lives that we have been paying for out of the general fund for many years. And there are a lot of other expenses that the general fund has picked up because of the opioid crisis. So we decided on a 60-40 split. So roughly in this first year, we'll have roughly a little over $4 million to spend new money for opioid prevention, interdiction, and treatment. And we'll be looking for a board, sort of similar to the public service grants. We've hired a manager. The manager is over in JFRD, and she has started, and she's in training as we speak. So that process is moving forward pretty aggressively.
And to the my interest in bringing up the Project Save Lives Trust Fund was the opportunity that the private sector and or others can make contributions to the trust fund.
They can.
So what I see, and I think you correctly used the word seed fund that we're looking to do, I think we as a council, getting past the report, getting to point of action, is, you know, actions speak louder than words. And the opportunity to say, if we're first in this game, and take, you know, strike while the iron is hot. It's a CRA funding is found money. Arguably it is to some extent. It isn't, I get that as well. But at the same time, if we have a commitment and I want to use these dollars to support these critical issues, then I think it warrants a serious consideration.
So a question through the chair to Mr. Peterson. I believe you said that a little over 1.4 million is what's currently in, which means it's not.
It's in this year's budget.
Correct. So like the ARP funding, that piece was a different conversation. That would have been when the ad valorem taxes hit and they're building out the budget, the new administration's building out a budget. Those dollars then would be for them. So this 1.48 is money that's unencumbered. If we're looking for some type of a seed or a floor, again, I don't like subjectivity, but this is, these are dollars right now that if we found a good cause, which we have one, and we have a need, which we, I think everyone would agree we have one, this would be something that I think would be an opportunity to build consensus around. Whereas the $14 million you were mentioning earlier, the CFO is already kind of placed on the record that those dollars have been used in the past, and although that was we can understand the argument of that they were used for this section, I think that there's an opportunity for some friction there. But am I right about the $1.4 million you said?
Through the chair to Council President, yes, sir. So the $1.4 million is in this year's budget. If it's not spent in the current year, it rolls back to the general fund. But just like the council did with the social justice funding,
right,
that $2.8 million rolled back to the general fund. But as part of that year's budget, you took those dollars from fund balance and said, we're going to use it for this. Fund balance increased by $2.8 million. We're going to take that $2.8 million and put it to social justice. So in this circumstance, assuming that 1.4 is not used,
right,
it rolls to the general fund. New year, you say $1.4 million we're putting towards CQLI purposes.
Got it. So we have one. That's some great thunder. I'm sorry. I'm easily distracted right now. But
No baseball tonight.
loving that, man. Loving that. But we have one cycle left. And so I'm feeling a lot of urgency. I think I filed maybe 5 or 6 bills already. This is something that's important to either go up or down by my colleagues. What's that process like when we're talking trust fund? That's out of my scope. I mean,
sure. So the $1.4 million is sitting in the CRA fund and has to be used for CRA purposes in the year. So to use these for CQLI purposes, you would have to wait until October 1st. But you as the CRA board, as long as you don't commit those dollars, they're going to stay there, be available to you October 1st.
Question.
Yes, sir.
Through the chair to Mr. Peterson, there's going to be a new CRA board starting July 1 with new members coming in that have not been a part of this conversation. Is there a step we can take now in filing something that, I mean, no, you can't hold future councils, I get all of that, but is there a step that this body, Councilman Newby was on this board, he's not going to be with us next term, is there a way that we can file legislation now that would stake our claim to, for said, I know we can't, you can't hold future councils to, I get that, but is there a way you can help me navigate that?
Sure, through the chair to the president, I'd want to confirm with legal, because
you can ask me. No, I'm joking.
Statutes govern how we use CRA funds, right? And so there are 5-6 different uses you can, broad categories of uses that CRA funds can be used for, and unused CRA funds roll back to the general fund because, but for the CRA, they would have been general fund dollars.
I got a question.
Yeah.
Hope it paused there. So if I know that 1.4 plus is going to roll back in, and I know 14 is coming in on the what day did you say? July 1?
October 1.
October 1 is when it comes. Is it possible? I can't write a bill to project either, can I?
I mean, you could write a bill that just takes $1.4 million from current fund balance.
Because I know I'm backfilling. I'm just playing. This is all semantics to me, sure. Right? It's just a shifting of line items. So I'm trying to figure out the simplest way so all of my colleagues will understand it. Because it can get very complex the minute someone sure. says CIP is 14 votes. And I don't like 14 vote things. Those items are just very sketchy, right? So general fund's 10. But if I know I'm going to backfill it, it's very easy to refute any type of allegation or accusation, I should say, that
sure.
you know, you're depleting your savings account. No, I actually have a money market over here that's gonna come in. Am I tracking in the right direction?
Sure, okay. Through the chair, the council president, you could, like I said, you could file legislation now that appropriates whatever amount from current general fund balance, which is in excess of $300 million, acknowledging that we anticipate $1.4 million to roll to the general fund at the close of the fiscal year due to CRA, blah, 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 right? So I think that gets to your intent of you're meeting the need now with the current council who's been involved in the whole process and anticipation that that 1.4 million rolls there. There's always a possibility that that 1.4 million is needed for something, but unlikely given what we have been given from OED so far
right.
as it relates to CRA.
Thank you. And through the chair to my colleagues, what am I missing? Because it seems simple to me if we have excess funds that are going to roll back in, that we're not doing any, it's a do no harm or do the least harm. We wouldn't be affecting the future budget or their opportunities. They're still getting that $14 million. What am I missing?
You're asking me?
Yes, sir. We're not touching opioid. That was important. That was important to me as well. But that little birdie was going around. I was like, no. Okay.
My concern would be, it's clearly your prerogative. The money is there. My concern is, I would not want a feeding frenzy on the council here right at the end of the year grabbing dollars, whether it's ARP dollars or whatever it is. I would look personally more favorably on a well thought out proposal. For example, if you said, I want to take that $1.4 million for homelessness and set up a trust fund, and I have downtown businesses that want to help with homelessness in this area, and they're willing to match that, I'm all with you.
One second. So through the chair and legal just left, but all of those things are languages I think I can put into legislation.
Sure.
And
sure.
that would protect these dollars, and that would ensure that we have it.
Yeah, I would want the private sector, from where I have seen, are want downtown cleaned up. And I think a partnership of some sort would be well received. At least to me, it would be.
No, I agree. And I just, what I don't want lost on our conversation is a lot of these groups that are doing the work, they do have those partnerships. And so that's why I love the talk of collaboration. When I partner with them, I am partnering with the business community because they are holding hands and lockstep with the business community. And I've heard it time and time again that it's kind of a three-part thing, right? You got to have the private sector, you have to have the nonprofits, and now this is government. Our job, in my opinion, is to fill gaps and provide things that are not being provided to help to improve quality of life. And so I think that this is our opportunity to do that. So I love hearing that thought, duly noted, and would have to tie it together. But I also go to the point of, like, I was around when the opioid process started, was one of the ones that was a part of the conversation from behind it as an ECA, I should say, so listening to it. And kind of understood the genesis of why Councilmember Gulliford first started it through getting introduced to the issue with his grandchildren and their exposure to some things at school. And so I've watched how that process started, and I've watched what we've done to your point, because I didn't even consider like MHOP and how it's going even further, and the cross bridge. When I look at homelessness, one of the first lessons I learned, to my surprise, was when a homeless individual broke bread with me, and 30 seconds after he finished, went into a mental health episode. And I just sat there in shock, like, what just happened? we were having great conversations, getting ready to try to lead you to some help, and now he literally tried to fight me right at the restaurant Magnificent or whatever it's called. And so that was what made me lean in to Cindy, and she started telling me that mental health, Terrence, plays a big part with a lot of folks that are in this time of life. So to me, I don't talk homelessness without thinking about mental health. And so all of that goes hand in hand to me. I think this is something that we've done some work, and I think if we get a funding source, we do need to build out a few more things to your point. But I think that this will be a great, great starting point. And I do have a 2 o'clock that I'm going to have to sneak out.
Well,
to.
If I could, I've kind of, the conversation has kind of gotten away from me, and I appreciate the fact and your passion for it. But two things to say in the context of this number one. I think the point you just made, we call this critical quality of life issues, but this is more than critical. And this is every bit as important as the opioid impact. My take on the conversation, I would have frankly, and I've not had word one with anyone representing the upcoming administration, so I don't know what their perspective is or interest in creating a sustaining fund going forward. I think that's something they may be interested in taking a look at. To the extent of limiting our conversation today to the $1.4 million, I would be okay with that in light of the fact that we've got 3.6 already, hopefully, and hopefully you'll be able to affirm that in the budget process already for this coming year. My concern in the context of this process is to say if we don't get this 3.6 and we only get this 1.4, it doesn't really say to me and to the community as a whole that this is critical and that we understand the impact it's having on our citizens each and every day. So I will support moving forward on the 1.4. I think it can be rolled into what's already on the table with respect to this. To speak specifically to the issue of the appropriateness of a sustainable funding, where that funding should come from, and the rationale for it. And I think we can be able to do that. Absorbing the 1.4 and what's already been done, to your point, if we want to push it right into tenant support, great, let's do that. We can make a determination as to how we want to parcel that 1.4 in this process. So if that's where we're going to land this plane today, I'm okay with it. But I think our responsibility is greater than that. I will say that. And hopefully we will find an opportunity, to your earlier point, working with the administration to make certain that we reach it together.
Well, I'm willing to co-sponsor whatever you put forward. And I do think going with the new administration and building out the rest of the pieces that you talked about is the right thing to do for the sustainable piece.
So, thank you. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we have time for public comment. I don't think we have any cards anyway, but thank you all for taking the time. We do have one?
It's here again. Well, you're all welcome to stay for my next
one. All right. We are adjourned.
You're being told we're